Everyone has a story. I get them to tell it. Welcome to the Aaron Bender Podcast, conversations with media personalities about their personal and professional lives and journeys. Really appreciate your support, whether you're watching on YouTube or DB&A TV at dbandatelevision.tv or streaming on Amazon Fire, Roku, and Apple TV, or listening on your favorite platform. Thank you for joining me. Before we get to my conversation with Matthias, a little about my story. I'm a widowed dad of two girls who just lost their mom. A grieving husband, a man in recovery trying to reconnect with the world with fresh eyes, faith, and perspective, a college journalism professor, a white guy in a world of injustice, a 20-year broadcast media veteran who had his dream job and then lost it. A year and a half ago, God gave me a gift, an opportunity to stop, step back, and breathe so I can learn about love, vulnerability, forgiveness, grace, self-care, patience, and understanding. Matthias is not just a YouTuber whose High Five Studios has channels with millions of subscribers, but he and his wife have a young daughter and son, and just a few years ago, Matthias was saved, a born-again Christian. We get into dad life, growing up with a Disney dad, the pressures of running a business that needs to scale back as it's changing its mission, unplugging, being more present and focused on and in the moment. But first, we kind of geek out about studio equipment. Is that a Rode mic?
Yes, it is a Rode mic. It's one of my favorites. It's not like necessarily a super nice mic. It's just, it sounds good and it's USB.
Yeah.
It just simplifies the system.
Let's geek out a little bit. Yeah, why did you choose that particular microphone?
This particular microphone, I like the way it sounds and it's USB. In the past, you know, as an audio engineer, went to schooling, got a bachelor's in audio engineering and everything like that. And it's so complicated. All the stuff is so complicated. So it's like, I know what I'm doing, but then it's like, if this to 99.9% of the people sounds just as good and it's one cable, why not?
Yeah. And I worked in radio for more than 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when searching for equipment for this home studio, people are like, oh, do you want a condenser mic? Do you want a dynamic? Do you want a this? And I'm like, you know what? I've worked with these things for 2.5 decades. I have no idea what you're talking about because I just did not. I didn't really get into that nitty gritty stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I didn't know that you, I knew that you went to CSUN originally for some film school action.
Yeah.
And I remember you telling the story when you came into the studios at KFI. You're like, I was there for like, I don't know, 3 weeks. And I already knew everything they were talking about because it was such a rudimentary class. I didn't realize that you had actually went on to eventually get your bachelor's in audio engineering. How did that all happen?
Yeah. That was my dad's doing. Thank you, dad. you know, still living at home at the time. And he was like, you gotta get a degree. You gotta go to school. So I was like, all right, so I'm going to do film, 'cause that's what I want to do. But, then, you know, you get into the class and it's really to teach film from the ground up. And that's one of the things that was a bit surprising to me, you know, someone who likes film and like a lot of other kids in the class were just like, wait, what? Like the first day of like our Pro Tools class was like, this is how you open the program, like a full hour dedicated to opening Pro Tools.
Wow.
And it was surprising. I'm not sure if they're just trying to stretch out content there or what.
Right.
Hey, I can be accused of the same thing on YouTube. So
as somebody who teaches college students, I know exactly where they were coming from because we get all kinds walking through those doors where they'll take a class. They're like, oh yeah, that looks fun. Let's do it. And they'll walk in. I don't know what a radio is. What's a radio? What's that? So I kind of see where they're coming from, but I could totally see how you might completely check out. And
well, you know, when you're paying a lot of money to go to school and you know it already, it's like, it's not a knock on like, this is all they're teaching. 'Cause it's like a lot of people, that's where they're going to start with film is just like, hey, I think I'm interested in film after college, you know, and that's where they start. It's great. But there's really no spot for someone who'd been like filming for like 5-10 years that like, you know, just wanted to learn industry stuff. So it eventually got to a higher level there, but it took a couple of years.
How did you get into that visual space? How did you know that, okay, I want to create things and this is the platform I want to use, or this is the medium?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm not entirely sure. I think, you know, growing up as a kid, I've always loved stories. I've always loved that visual medium. Always loved telling stories. And I think I've always been around stories. So it was kind of like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just kind of natural, very natural progression, because my dad was an Imagineer. So, you know, going to work, going to, like, you know, take your kid to work day, it was like, it was like, this is inside Disneyland. That's crazy.
I was just going to say, you're like, wait a minute. I'm at Disneyland. I'm totally at Disneyland right now.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, we would go to Burbank where all the offices were, but yeah. The offices looked pretty cool too. It was just a really interesting creative environment.
Could
you
imagine if, as an Imagineer, they go there and it's just like gray cubicles?
Well, it's that far off. It's not that far off, to be honest. There were definitely gray cubicles.
Yeah,
but you know, there's giant, like, Mickey Mouse hats and stuff too. So,
what kinds of things did he do as an Imagineer that you could actually, that was tangible at Disneyland or something else?
Yeah. I think, like, for instance, he worked on the ride system for the Indiana Jones ride.
Okay.
Like, so, like, you know how the vehicle moves around, but it's not actually moving around on its wheels. So that actuator system he helped design. We relocated to Florida for a couple of years while he worked on Mission Space. He also worked on, if you recall, Rocket Rod, which isn't a ride anymore.
No, I don't remember that one.
That was that.
Sorry, Dad.
Yeah. If you go in Tomorrowland,
yeah,
there is like a big track kind of above the land. It's still there, but it's not used now. And basically it was like this super fast kind of like futuristic hot rod type track that it would just zip through Tomorrowland on. I'm not sure. I think my dad said it was too expensive to maintain or something like that. And that's why they shut it down. But,
how much of that Imagineering and engineering did you pick up?
That's a great question. I have no idea. I think, like, what I picked up from my dad and my grandpa was the problem solving, basically. The problem solving. So it's like, we're always solving different problems, but I think there's still that level of, like, almost obsession of wanting to solve a problem, wanting to really figure out how things work and then how to put them all back together. Generally speaking, what I deal with is a little bit more malleable in nature, is a little bit more abstract in nature from, like, a creative side, rather than, like, more engineering practical, but still fascinating nonetheless.
How many channels do you have now?
Not many anymore.
But yeah. There was a time, I think it was like 6, 7, or 8 or something like that.
Yeah.
You're just juggling all kinds of channels.
Yeah. No kidding. And that was a problem at the business. That was definitely a problem because I'd scaled up too fast. And that was one of the things I've been working on over the past, like, couple of years in my business, is, like, scaling back down and doing it right. So right now we have, I think, 2 channels that are currently running.
Okay.
Yeah. 2 channels. And we're going to start a series of more channels in the future. But for now, just those 2.
Why do you feel like you scaled up too quickly?
Well, everyone tells you don't scale up too fast, right? Because it'll implode, but no one tells you why. No one tells you why that's a problem, or, like, how it actually bursts at the seams and where all the seams burst.
Or, like, how do you know what is too fast?
Yeah. How do you know what's too fast? You know? And so I think for me more specifically, I have a really unique business where we're trying to scale creativity, right? Where it's not necessarily, like, let's say engineering, for example, since we're talking about it, where it leads largely based on control, right? Where you have to hit these specifications and you have to verify these specifications and then you have to move that through the pipeline and everything is documented and everyone's system needs to be the same system so that there's all this, you know, collection of data, right? But creatively, what I've learned in the business that I'm attempting to develop is control stifles creativity. And so
right. There's
a really weird, strange juxtaposition between control, freedom, and transparency that is very, very difficult to navigate effectively without, either having a business that eventually becomes obsolete because people can't innovate, or because eventually everyone's so misaligned, there's such a discrepancy between what everyone's producing, you know, and everyone's like, is that the same company that produced that? You know what I mean? So that's been pretty much the biggest challenge I've been working on the past 2 years, is like, what does that look like?
Now, you mentioned something interesting there where you talk about this business that you're trying to develop. And if you look at your channel and your following, and you would think, hey, wait a minute, what do you mean trying to develop? You're already there. What do you mean that you're trying to develop it?
Yeah, absolutely. So basically about 3 years ago, I took a shift in the direction of the studio. So Hi-Fi Studios, when it first started out, was largely about this idea of creating an environment where people can create amazing things and make content for online platforms and various things like that, right? And so it started with this really individualistic mission, and almost like this collectivist idea, but it wasn't a collective, it was a company, right? And so when you kind of act like a collective, even though you're a company, like ultimately it's not gonna work, because people inside the collective have to be there of their own merit. They can't just be there because it's fun, because you like being on camera and all that kind of stuff. You gotta actually produce, or else you're, you know, thrown out of the collective. But with a company, it was this really awkward spot where I was in, where it's just like, I had no idea what I was doing in the first 2 years of this company in front of millions and millions of people. It's like, literally had no idea. You know, you read a couple books and you're like, sure, I can figure it out. You know?
But part of that, the youthfulness of that, the naivete, if you will, that is endearing to a lot of people, and can be enduring to a certain degree.
It has been. That's why we're still here, I think, is because, you know, one of the things we did get right is really build our business on the idea of relationships and not necessarily the idea of product or commodity or anything of that nature, right? So we've been able to, with relative success, transition over this long period of time so we don't rock the boat too much into this kind of new vision of what the studio is going to be. Whereas before, it was this collectivist idea of like, let's all just get a bunch of people together and see what happens and see what they make. But that's a horrible business idea. It's like, it's absolutely the worst, right? And like we did produce a lot of good content, but it was like the most stressful times of my life, where it's like on the outside, it looked great. Like everyone was making content and everyone looked like they were having fun. But on the inside, it was stressful beyond belief, because there's so many inconsistencies, so many quality control issues. And, you know, when half of your staff is like, well, you know, I don't even know if I want to do this anymore. It's like, who's doing the work then? The other half.
Right.
So scaling up too fast also presented this problem of like not really being clear on hiring and like how to hire and like who to hire. And so that was one of the reasons why we ended up in that previous situation. But now, about 3 years ago, we kind of all came together, like all 40 something of us. And I came in with a new vision for the studio. Not that different, but different enough to where it wasn't, to where it would like align us all in the same direction. And then all together, we came up with the mission and values for this new direction of the company. And then once we kind of all sat together for like 3 months and like all agreed on all of these things, at that point, it was like, all right, we all agreed on this. Now it's time to hold each other accountable to it. And in that time, we've come down to, I think, 15 employees, right? Obviously COVID had a little bit of an impact too,
right?
But from 40 to 15 employees, and on the outside, it looks like, wow, the whole thing's falling apart. But in reality, we're just really getting more focused until we're at the point right now where it's like, all right, now I think everyone is really aligned, not just saying they like it, but actually doing it. And I think we're going to move forward and actually start to scale back up at a moderate and controlled pace.
How much of the whittling down from 40 to 15 was, okay, we're going to have to let you go, and the other side of it saying, you know what, this isn't what I signed up for, not in a bad way, but yeah, but I'm going to take my talents to South Beach, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because it's like, there's this idea, we have had some individuals that have said like, you know, this isn't what I signed up for, but that always threw me off because we were all in the room together and we all agreed on it. We had those meetings. We talked about it. We even talked about what it might mean for all of our jobs. And then we all signed it. So
literally, you know, signed, I mean, up like, for it.
We literally signed. So, you know, I covered my, you know, crossed my T's and dotted my I's right there. And wasn't just to do that, just to say like, we signed off on it, now you're accountable, but to like seriously hope that everyone wants to go in this direction. But in reality, like when push comes to shove, like people are just signing the thing because other people to the left of them are doing it. They don't actually want to forge ahead.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah.
Was there always a vision to create a company and to create through that company? Or did you start creating content, whether it's YouTube or otherwise, and said, you know what, I think people would want to join me on this, and let's start a company so we can, you know, put out more content?
Yeah. I would say I've always wanted to tell big stories my entire life. I've always been really fascinated with epics, right? And I'm not talking necessarily about like, let's say one Lord of the Rings movie, but like the serial epic of all of them. You know what I mean? Like, I'm really fascinated by this like Russian nesting doll situation of story, right? Where you see like the entire Marvel universe where it, like, it has this overarching narrative. And then you have in each movie, they have the overarching narrative. And then each scene, there's that narrative, and each beat, like, and every essentially sentence that each person says back and forth is that kind of like, you know, polarity, right?
Right.
It's very fascinating to me. And so I've always loved like, how big can things get? And so it's more of like a curiosity rather than anything, but I do have a lot of different ideas of like how we're going to scale up, but I don't know. It's something that really fascinates me.
Did you have a humbling moment prior to your deciding to take the company back a little bit, step back, scale back, or was that the moment like in your life where you said, okay, this is my time for humility and patience?
I wish it was so easy, right? All right, this is my time for humility and patience.
This one.
This is the moment. From now on, I will be humble. You know? It's just like, you say that to yourself, and then like 3 months later, you're like, why am I such an egotistical jerk? You know, so it's like every 3 months, I'm like, this is the time.
Still not humble. I'm trying.
Still not humble enough, you know? And you know, the process of becoming a Christian has definitely changed it. And I think ultimately it comes down to that. It comes down to, you know, around year 30 of my life, right? A little bit right before that, I was saved. So I became a Christian, and that completely changed my life. That changed my perspective. That changed, that idea of like, all right, now I want to be humble, you know, where it's just like every day now where it's just like, okay, today is the day where I'm fully humble, you know? But it was about 3 years ago where I realized like, wow, like I'm doing this. I thought I was doing this because I wanted to, when in reality I'm doing this for ego, and that's not good, right? And that's where I think like the first part of my business was really rooted. I think it was rooted in this idea of like me wanting to be the head of this collectively creative company, and having a lot of like talented creatives around me, rather than let's saying like, well, what are we going to make for someone else? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like there was that, I think, spiritual awakening of being like, okay, now that I'm saved, like, what does this mean for my life? And now, like, what does that mean for my business? You know, like, I can't keep operating the way I've been operating because that is pride, you know? So
how did that spiritual awakening come about?
That's a great question. I think I think the Lord has a way of humbling us in where we hold our pride, right? Like, so for me personally, it was in that area of my business where it was like I was rigidly holding on to this idea and needed almost this idea of this image of myself or where I've rooted my identity to exist. And if it didn't exist, who am I? Kind of a thing, right? And it was that part of my life where I think God really just crushed it. Just crushed all of it. Just being like, okay, that's not going to work. Here's why it doesn't work. And here's why it's, you know, the more stress than ever. And, you know, really moving towards that pride, really moving towards this quote unquote need of my identity to be in work and creativity, really just led to destruction, just, you know, deep destruction of like, just constant burnout, constant stress, you know, inability to communicate, you know, marital problems, things of that nature, right? All stemming from me, right? And so I think he just really, really crushed me there. And so, you know, when I was crushed, it was like, okay, which way is right? Now that I can stop thinking about myself a little bit, which way is the right way?
how did you, at that fork in the road, decide to take the right path, you know,
yeah,
capital R to the how did you decide to take that right path? Because we all have choice. That's the power of God, is he gives us free will.
Yeah.
How did you decide, okay, that's the path I want to take? And I ask you because I say in the intro to the podcast, I lost my job in late 2019 and I didn't know for several months why I lost my job. And it was because I was living my life in such a way to just, it was destructive. It was absolutely destructive. And it wasn't for a couple of months. I was like, well, why now? Why this? And then a couple of months later, we learned that Len's cancer had come back.
Yeah.
I needed to be home. A couple months after that, the pandemic takes hold. I needed to be home. Well, of course, that's why I lost my job. And thankfully, I lost my job. That was a blessing. It was a gift.
Yeah.
How did you decide at that fork in the road to take the right path?
By searching for it, I would say. And not necessarily, I would say, you know, what I've learned about myself is that, you know, this process of sanctification, of transformation, let's say, to glorification, is a really kind of nuanced, delicate process. And I constantly always kind of revert back to my old ways, my old self. And so, you know, how I turned to that right path at the time, I'll say definitely was okay. You know, turn to God, like I wish, but when you're so spiritually ungrounded and new, all you know is legalism. All you know is like, great. So what are all the rules in the Bible? Right. You know? And so you start looking for them and you start looking for them and then you start getting upset because they're all contradicting each other. And then you're like, what the heck? And then you eventually wake up and you find that's the design of it, is that it's not about rules. Like, you idiot, it's about wisdom, you know? So it was like this constant searching and falling and searching and stumbling and searching and falling and getting to this place of like, okay, what's the right move here? What, you know, and as my transformation has taken hold more and I'm much more stable in my faith, it gets to be much more simple lately. I wouldn't say easy, but much simpler, right? Where it's now it's more of just like, great, okay, the single easiest, not the single easiest, but I should say the single question that it all rides on is what glorifies God right now in this moment, right? Whereas in the past, it would be like, okay, what's the right thing to do? You know what I mean? Where it's like, to an unsuspecting ear, they sound the same, but they're not.
Now, as somebody with their face on a channel on YouTube, you know, you're selling you're marketing you. How do you then transition either away from that or to a place where it's like, okay, I'm still marketing me. It's just a different message or it's a different purpose.
Yeah. I think that's a really great, that's a really great question. And
blooper reel. I found it. I found it. I try to get one in every interview. I'm going to make a sizzle reel of just bloopers. I promise you. And that's the one.
Yeah, I think that's been a question I've been trying to figure out like for a couple years. And ultimately about 9 months ago, I really kind of coming together with the team and really finessing this vision and mission. I think that's it, right? Whereas the big problem has been, yeah, where most people are connected to Matthias as the, you know, the relationship with Matthias through all of this content. And effectively you could call me the product, right? Mm-hmm. Of the business of like old High Five. And, or at least our relationship, the product. And that posed a big problem naturally, because you can't scale an individual, right? Beyond, beyond what we are already doing, right? That's like max scale to a degree, right? At least from the context of relationship, right? Where it's like, there's only so much time in the day I can produce content. And beyond that, that's all the content that's getting produced. So I had to kind of like dig down deep and realize, okay, why? Why are people connecting to me? It's like, I'm not any type of special guy over here. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just a dude on the internet. And so it's like, why are people consistently like, okay, where's Matthias though? I want to watch a video with Matthias. I'm like, what is that? Because I've tried to transition out of channels many, many times. And when I transition out of the channel, people like largely stop watching. Not always, but historically over time, then it dies.
Right. I mean, because you could have 85 different people playing with a toy, the same toy, and it's not going to hit as much as one person playing with 85 different toys over the course of 85 videos.
Yeah, exactly. And furthermore, even if you have the same person playing with 85 different toys, it's not going to hit the same as like someone who knows what they're talking about toys, you know? Right. And so it's been a while of like trying to figure out, okay, why are people connecting to me and how do I scale that as a product and not me as the product, right? And ultimately, I think it's always been one of the things I've always been passionate about, which is storytelling, right? I think one of the things I've always been passionate about, and I've always, I won't say had a natural talent because I've worked really hard for it. You know, like I even remember in, you know, like 10th, no, 9th, yeah, 9th or 10th grade, like just in a creative writing class, like writing like 30 pages of this story that it only had to be 3. I got an A on it, but it was like, just like, you know, just like, I could do this now, you know? Right. And like, I remember my teacher being like, you should get published. This is great. And she was not always a super nice teacher to everyone else. So I took that as a big compliment.
Oh, well, yeah, but, for sure.
So it was like, okay, yeah. Like, you know, when I would be, when everyone else was out partying or playing in high school and stuff like that, I would be storytelling. I would be doing that basically, whether it would be in music or video or anything. So I'd been honing that skill for a while. And I think ultimately, it's not surprising that storytelling is the key, right? Storytelling is the key with almost anything, but how to tell a story that connects people, right? And so I'm still working on this, but we've essentially made the new vision, mission, and values of our company, I would say around this idea of storytelling, so that it doesn't matter if I'm in the frame or if I even wrote the story, so long as there's these key pieces of this relational storytelling that are critical to be there, I think the audience is going to love it. So we'll see.
What looks like success to you then with this new mission? Because it used to be all kinds of followers, all kinds of likes and views.
Yeah.
And, you know, the AdSense rolling in and all that other stuff. But yeah, what looks like success now that you have this new mission?
This new mission. So the vision. So for us, it all starts with the vision, right? And so the vision of the studio right now is to create worlds so immersive that people can find themselves within the compelling stories, right? And so the idea of that is that we create worlds that multiple stories can live within, right? So let's look at like Marvel Cinematic Universe, right? It's this, again, this idea of this epic where like there's these multiple worlds, like Captain America's world, let's say, you know, the world of Wakanda, let's say, and all those stories that come out of that. And like telling this cohesive, expansive story with all these like small stories within, right? And so that's like the vision. And that to really achieve success in a vision, in that particular vision, I would say comes in line with actually building multiple universes that have multiple worlds, that have multiple stories. Right now we have one story, and I wouldn't even say it's, I would say it's building out a world currently, if that makes sense, right? Yeah. So there's this kind of like hierarchy, right? So I would say when we get to a place of having multiple universes, that would be, I would say, success for that stage of the vision. Does that make sense? It's really abstract in nature.
But... No, I feel like it does make sense because you've related it to the MCU. And
yeah.
I think by this point, now, if we were having this conversation in 2005, I would be like, A, what's the MCU? B, you know, let's explain that again. I need a PowerPoint presentation and, you know, all that stuff. But as somebody who, you know, you rely on all these different platforms, YouTube being, you know, your bread and butter and your moneymaker, however you want to describe it.
Yeah.
You brought up 8 or 9 months ago, there was kind of a shift and you're not on Instagram anymore. That was around the time that you left Instagram.
Was it?
I think so, yeah. July, August, somewhere around
I
there.
I think that was maybe coincidental.
Oh, okay. But why leave a platform when all these different platforms serve each other?
Yeah, great question. I would say there were multiple components in like leaving these platforms, right? And generally speaking, I think a lot of people put a lot of weight on follower counts, when in reality, it doesn't really mean much at all. And so people would see me delete my Twitter account that had like 500,000 followers and my Instagram account that had almost 700,000 followers and be like, you're absolutely insane, right?
right.
You're absolutely insane. And that's really not the only, okay, so there's one slight regret, and it's barely even a regret because I don't even use we don't really do external stuff at the company, but the only slight regret is, oh, it was way easier to contact like bigger names.
Totally. Yes.
So
yes. If you get really into DMs with a blue check,
yeah.
Yes. No, I totally get that.
Exactly. So that was the only thing of like, okay, strategically that was the bad move there. But in terms of like growing a following, like the following follows the story, and that's pretty much it. Right. So wherever the best story I'm telling is, that's where the audience will be. Right. And if the audience isn't there, you're not telling a great story. You know what I mean? Like, or you're not clear on the story you're telling, or there's not enough conflict, or the obstacles aren't real. You know, there's just the basic storytelling bits there. If they're not there, the audience isn't there. And I think deleting those for me was much more about, mental health, mental clarity. And never really looked back, honestly. It was like maybe like a month later, I was like, oh, that was inconvenient though, because I can't message that one person I want to. But, you know, eventually if you email them or you find an agent, it's not that big of a deal. But for me, it was just like, it was about this idea of information overload. And, you know, as someone who has a lot on their plate, you know, running a business and, you know, through the pandemic and, you know, having a family and, running multiple businesses and helping my brothers run their business, there was just not enough space in my head for it. And it had no positive impact. So that was a time in my life where I was like looking at everything in my life and being like, okay, is there real value there or is there just fear there? Right. And there was just fear. There was fear that I would be disconnected. There's fear that I wouldn't be aware of everything that's going on. There's fear that, you know, to be a part of this culture, I had to have Instagram, have Twitter. And it was all fear. And so deleting it was just so nice.
And it really kind of goes to the mission of simplification
yeah.
and just kind of leaning out, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. Because it's like before that too. And so I should preface this too, because before that I had taken a full year off of social media anyways. So it wasn't like it was just cold turkey. I had a problem and it was, you know, this problem. It was more of like, okay, I took a year off social media. That felt really good. I'm going to get back on social media now. And like within, I would say within minutes, my brain was running old scripts again, running old scripts, comparing.
And you could recognize that.
I could recognize it immediately because I was out of it, because I had been out of it for so long, and immediately going back into Instagram and being like, oh my gosh. Okay. And so there's obviously a balance that I personally have to strike. And I'm not saying this is like what everyone should do by any stretch of the imagination, because everyone has their own like temptations and things. But for me personally, it was like, it was a temptation to compare and to idolize, you know, status or worth or work value or whatever, but didn't yield any fruit. So for me, it was like an easy axe, and I just don't have to fight that battle, if that makes sense.
No, it totally makes sense. How much pressure, if you could kind of compare, how much pressure did you feel leading a group of 40 people at High Five compared to now 15? You know, it's the idea where it's like, okay, I've got 40 people here. I need to lead them somewhere. Or these are the 15 who've stuck with me and who are now on this smaller boat. It's a faster boat, but it's a smaller boat. And now they're looking to me.
Yeah.
You know, I compare the pressure of those two roles.
I would say different pressure. I would say completely different pressure. I think, you know, back in that time where, it's a great question, because I haven't thought about it like that, because I would argue I'm relatively under the same amount of pressure, but it's a different kind of fear. It's a different kind of pressure, right? It's like what I'm trying to think about stress and pressure and all of that as just like another word for, sin. Right.
Yeah.
And it helps me kind of like understand that, because it's like when I feel all this stress, it's because I'm holding on so tight that, or I'm fighting for it so hard because I think I have to have it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And so if I like let go of that, then it's not stressful. Hey, if it loses, no big deal. If it wins, it's awesome. But if it loses, no big deal, you know?
Not to mention, you've got God on your side now. You've got God with you. To carry that burden and to carry that stress with you. Whereas leading a group of 40 with a completely different mission, it's all on you. It's on your shoulders. Yeah. Now you're like, oh wow, okay, this is pressure and stress, but I've got help.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. 100%. And like back then it was really hard because I thought I had to figure everything out. And now I know I don't have to figure everything out, and I have a really clear plan going forward, but I would say moving into the plan is really scary, because there's this different idea of failure, right? Where it's like, oh, if I fail, I'm going to let everyone down, versus, oh, if I fail, what will that make me, right? Yeah. And so, you know, there's still, you know, a lot of internal processing that I personally have to go through on like a spiritual level to let go, or I should say let be. Let be is much stronger than let go.
Right.
But
the idea that I can only do what I can do, and I'm going to put out there my best, whatever that looks like on that day, because Tuesday's best is going to be different from Friday's best. Yeah. And so I put it out there. And if it, like you said, if it hits, it hits. That's great. If it doesn't, that's okay, because I'm putting out the content, or I'm putting in the work that I know I'm capable of in that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think that's the hardest thing too for me personally, is knowing what I'm capable of in that moment, because it's very much of like this, there's this idea of like, okay, what am I capable of in this moment? And I so often get that wrong. I so often think I'm way more capable in that moment, or have a really bad understanding of how this choice in this moment that I'm capable of doing will bring about consequences that I'm not capable for in the future.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that's always been a personal challenge of mine. So for me, it's always been like, okay, how do I simplify? How do I simplify? How do I simplify? Less is more, less is more, less is more, he says with 1,000 books on the back of his shelf. But
What are your favorite three books back there? If you had to pick out
my
three.
Favorite three books. Let's see. I would say Netflix's No Rules Rules. That's key.
Why?
That's game changer for creative businesses. I would say Ed Catmull's Creativity Inc. about Pixar. Those have been instrumental in like helping me understand like how to run a creative business at scale, or at least how to build up to one, because we're really not at scale anymore. But and then beyond that, what was that one book? I can see the color. I can see the title. I would say, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, which is a case study on the way of Jesus rather than just what he says. So it's a really interesting book.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, and really interesting book.
And that's something that you read in the last few years?
Yes. I think I read that one 2 years ago, maybe. And it really gave me a much better understanding of, you know, what Jesus did and how he processed information and how he went about and held people accountable or didn't, or left or whatever, you know, or dealt with temptation and stuff. And there was this overwhelming idea of simplicity in that, and slowness and humility, naturally, those three words. And those are the, you know, interestingly enough, those are the three words that I always stray from. So,
right.
They're the easiest to stray from in this world.
I will admit right now, I've not watched every one of your videos, every second of every minute of every video. So I ask this with the idea that, when creating content, 99% of the time, you don't want to touch politics. You don't want to touch religion. How concerned were you as religion found you, as Jesus found you and saved you? How concerned were you that you could no longer hold on to the audience that has grown up with you?
That's a great question. I think that I wasn't ever really worried of losing an audience. And I think that's a testament to how effective relationships are managed, right? Where, like, for instance, if you have a relationship with someone and they're just a jerk and you're not saying anything to them, is that a great relationship? No, it's a horrible relationship, and you got to set boundaries, right? And so something I did more effectively with my audience than even with my personal relationships was set boundaries, which is really interesting. But I don't know why. There's a level of like vulnerability that I always had online that was much more difficult to have in person, because you're talking to a camera. But regardless, the boundaries that I set up with my audience really allowed me to have an audience that was much more, I would say, open-minded. And not open-minded from the standpoint of like, I'm accepting of everything, but open-minded from the standpoint of saying, hey, I'm open to being wrong, you know?
Right.
So generally speaking, I've never really had any problems talking about faith or anything like that, because in the past I amassed an audience that, you know, we all held each other accountable to a degree. So I wouldn't say much, but I think the bigger piece is, when I didn't have any wisdom on when to bring it up or how to bring it up or why to bring it up, you know? And so it was much more like, this idea of like when it feels natural, I'm just going to talk about it. And if it gets cut out because the editors, you know, thought it didn't fit or whatever, like, I'm not going to sweat about it. I'm not going to like, you know what I mean? Like,
I'm laughing because I'm imagining like in the middle of Battle Universe, stop everybody, stop.
Right.
Let me talk to you about Jesus.
And I have done that occasionally as a joke, but also to actually get it in there.
right.
To a degree, because there's often times where it presents an occasion to where you can deliver it with humor, you know?
Yes.
And it still hits people sometimes. It still hits people in the right way. And if not, hey, it was still a joke, right?
You brought up something that over the last year and a half I've had to develop. And my wife, Len, was key, like 99.9% key in helping me be vulnerable. yeah. and be okay with feeling what I feel, sharing what I feel, talking about it, and just kind of sinking into it. I remember 3, 4, or 5 years ago, people starting talking about as mental health really got pushed to the surface of conversations in this society. Let's just sink into it, feel it. And I'm like, I have no idea what you mean. I have no idea what you're talking about. How difficult was it for you to understand and accept and be vulnerable?
Yeah. I think I've always been relatively vulnerable on camera. So, which is weird.
I don't think that's weird at all. And granted, you and I were talking on microphones in studios that we've set up because we like this space. We feel most comfortable in a space like this. So it makes perfect sense that we would be more vulnerable with a microphone or a camera than we would with people who we can actually make connections with in our lives. Makes total sense to me.
I think with my family though, or with you know, coworkers, there's always this balance of like transparency versus honesty too. And, or, you know, what they need to know, what they should know. And also what are the boundaries in play? So, you know, obviously real relationships are a lot more complicated than a relationship with an audience.
Yeah.
Because I don't know why, I haven't really thought about that much, but I think for me, vulnerability has been just through that process of sanctification and trying to really care about what is right versus wanting to be right. And just being like, hey, I'm going to be open about this, but I might be wrong. And I think for me, openness is key in vulnerability, where it's just like, there's this idea of like, well, I might be wrong, so I'm open to hearing alternate perspectives, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that allows me to be vulnerable and safe at the same time, because like I'm approaching it as like, I don't have all the answers. You know what I mean? Like, this is just either what I'm feeling, or this is just, you know, what I think exists or how it works or whatever. So I, you know, I don't know. But I think there's a lot of people that have fear of man, so to speak, right? Worried about what other people think. And I've never really been too worried about what other people think per se. I've much more been worried about what I think about myself.
But as somebody who you benefit from the likes and the views, how do you distance yourself from what people like? You're in the business of people liking what you put out and create.
Yes, that's a great question, because I'm not ever really worried about what people like, if they like me or not. You know, I'm like not trying to make everyone happy. I think it's kind of silly if everyone tries to make everyone happy, or, you know, I'm not scared of other people's emotions either. So I'm not really worried like, okay, if you're going to have a big explosion because this upset you, like, okay, let's talk about it. Let's talk about it like adults here though, you know?
Right.
But with having a business based on what people like, and, you know, literal likes, or I should say figurative likes, I'm not sure. That my philosophy has always been, the customer isn't always right, and double check they're even a customer.
That's true. That's true. I don't remember who I was talking with, but the idea that, LZ Granderson, a sports talk show host and columnist and social commentator. He's like, I don't live in the comments, generally speaking, because more often than not, if they've got something super negative to say, then they're likely not, a follower or somebody who even knows me.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. And I think that's a really interesting point too. And something that I want to scale inside my business a little bit better too, is this idea of like, okay, when you get negative feedback, external negative feedback, your first step is to check if they're a customer. And are they actually supporting? Do they actually understand, and are they getting value out of the product? And that's like the first thing I think that's most important. Whereas like a lot of people, let's say, for instance, the best example rather than content would be like, I'm walking up to buy I go to the store and I buy a bat, right? And you know, a week goes by, I come back to the store and I'm like, yo, this bat sucks at hitting golf balls, bro. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. you're not a customer, right? you made a bad choice. You know what I mean? Like, right. you should return this and go away, you know?
Yeah.
And that's okay, right? Because there's this idea that you got to please everyone. You got to please everyone. But the idea of pleasing everyone really means you please no one. So having a really clear understanding of like what your product is, what your market is, what your focus is critical in understanding like, okay, is this your customer? Because if it's not, like, just say, okay, I don't think this product's for you. Goodbye.
Right. Right.
Okay.
We'll play some word association. It's not, I say one word and you say one word. It's I say one word and you say whatever the hell you want. pardon my language. You have to slap an explicit on this podcast. but I'll say, I've got three categories here. The first of which is Amanda.
Amazing.
Okay. That just was one word. No, okay. Not one word. Not one word. You could say whatever the heck you want. You could expound. Yes. No.
Gotcha.
So you could expound and expand and elaborate however you want.
Amanda, I would say, my rock on earth. she is just this steady, amazing creature that God has given me, and truly blessed to have her in my life. Throughout all the ups and downs, she never doubts me, even when she for sure should. She never doubts me, always trusts me. And I would say that.
Luna
is sharp, intelligent, quick, fast, literally fast.
How old is she now?
She's turning 5 soon.
Oh my God.
And she's just this little pint of energy and love that is incredible. And so she's just, I don't know. She's just like, I don't know. She's just this smart little kid. This really smart little kid.
You're a different business owner now than you were when you started.
Yeah.
How are you a different father now compared to, say, the first 6 months to a year of Luna's life?
Yeah, I would say I'm more present. I think in the past, like my level of love for the kids has never changed, but I think my ability to express it has, right? So I think the way I thought I was expressing love, or how I needed to express love, which was like, you know, go to work and like provide and do all this kind of, right, you know, stuff.
Drive them where they need to be driven.
Was not the way that they needed love. And so really coming into this idea of being everything for, you know, the people in my life that care for me, and shifting based on not what I want, but what they want. And so obviously for her, it's quality time, you know? And so I'm more present, I would say. More present.
How about Atticus?
Atticus, word association?
Yeah.
little dude, just this little spunky food-loving dude. I don't know. He's just this like, I don't know, really. I wouldn't say he's passive, but he's just chill. As long as he's got food, he's like, whatever. But if he doesn't have food, he's angry. He's angry and he wants to like control things, you know? Other than that, he's chill, you know? He reminds me of like a king, like a couple hundred years ago, you know, like a man is walking him down the street with this wagon and he's just sitting in, you know?
Just taking it all in. Just,
yeah.
This world is mine.
Yeah, exactly. He thinks he's a little king right now, I would say. But he's an amazing kid. He's very, surprisingly, very obedient. You know, I'll be like, Atticus, put that back. And he'll be like, and he'll put it back as fast as he possibly can. And I'm like, oh, well, he listens.
Wow, is that all it takes? Okay, all right.
Yeah.
If I'd asked you 5 years ago where you would be in life 5 years from then, I feel like it would be a lot more difficult to pinpoint. because of all the changes in your life in the last 5 years. Can you go 5 years out from now?
Probably not. I would say, I really don't know. I really don't know what life has in store for me. I've got plans, but, you know,
I need them in details right now, please.
Right.
Share the screen on Zoom. Let's go.
I literally on the right side of my monitor, there was a plan I'm literally been working on. But they're just plans, you know, like, I don't know. I'm trying to hold them all loosely now, you know, and I'm trying to learn how to be present and say, hey, that's a plan, but that's all it is. It's not anything else. It doesn't mean it has to happen or has to exist. So for me personally right now, it's like largely about not worrying about where I am in 5 years, personally, you know, because like I have the luxury of having paid off the house and paid off the cars and stuff like that. So I do have the luxury of not worrying about it from that stratus.
Right, right.
Otherwise I would be like, okay, we gotta have some plans for that, you know? But beyond that, it's just, you know, how can I be a better father? How can I be a better husband? How can I be a better leader? You know? And just figuring out those types of things. Like, I assume in 5 years I'll be better at all of those, but I don't know how, at what level.
Matt, thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
To connect with Matt, you can go to highfivestudios.com. I've put links in the show notes. You can watch this episode on YouTube and DB&A TV. Follow the Aaron Bender podcast on your favorite platforms and link to it at aaronbender.com. That's also where you can find all my social media. If you have guest ideas or comments, email me, aaronbendermedia@gmail.com. Be well, and thanks for listening.